All right, what's up, comrades? Welcome to the Left Side of Liberty. And today I was going to do a special episode about contradictions within the conservative ideology. And I decided to procrastinate, I guess, on that for a little bit. I'm still going to do that in this podcast, but I have to talk about something first. So, as many of you probably know, the US has basically announced that it's going to war with Iran. That's essentially what we're doing at this point in time. And it just drives me nuts. I mean, I barely got any sleep last night because this is just so infuriating to me. And this is serious. This is why, see, with most of my podcasts, I try to, although I cover serious stories, and stories that mean something to a great number of people, I generally do try to lighten the mood at certain points during my podcasts. So sometimes it'll sometimes my podcast will consist of me laughing at people like Dennis Prager, Candace Owens, Ben Shapiro. Those types of characters. So a lot of it is like serious, but with a little bit of fun mixed in. So that's what I like to do, at least for the double video breakdown portion of the podcast, which I'm not really sure I want to do videos today. I might do a video of Tulsi Gabbard on Fox and Friends explaining why she's against what the US is doing right now in regards to Iran, but I haven't decided if I'm still gonna play that video yet. So anyway, the US has essentially escalated to war with Iran, and the USA Today has USA Today has a story that's a pretty good summary of the events that have happened over the last few days. So anyway, the headline was public. The story was published 4 hours ago, and here's the headline. It says, "State Department urges all Americans to leave Iraq after U.S. Embassy attack." So it says, "The U.S. State Department is urging all U.S. citizens to leave Iraq after the New Year's Eve attack on the embassy in Baghdad by Hashid al-Shaabi, a pro-Iranian paramilitary group that caused extensive damage to the property. On December 31st, 2019, the embassy suspended public consular services until further notice as a result of damage done by Iran-backed terrorist attacks on the embassy compound," the State Department said in an update to its Iraq travel advisory on Wednesday. Photos show a burned and charred reception area, smashed windows, and vandalized rooms left behind by supporters and members of the Iranian-trained Hashid al-Shaabi military network, also known as the Popular Mobilization Forces. No deaths or serious injuries have been reported, and the embassy was not evacuated. In response, the Pentagon deployed 750 paratroopers from the 82nd Airborne, based at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, to the region. The travel advisory noted that the U.S. consulate in Erbil, located in northern Iraq, toward its northern border in Turkey, remains open. And then, consulates differ from the consulates differ from embassies in that they focus on tasks such as aiding Americans abroad and issuing passports to citizens, as well as visas to foreigners. Iraq, which shares its western border with Iran, was already at level 4, which means do not travel, the highest warning level on the State Department's travel advisory scale before the embassy attack, due to years of armed conflict in the region. Tensions began escalating on December 27th when a rocket attack killed a U.S. civilian contractor in the northern city of Kirkuk. Of Kirkuk. On December 29th, U.S. planes bombed sites tied with the U.S. U.S. planes bombed sites tied to militia group Kataib Hezbollah. So Hezbollah, essentially. The U.S. embassy was hit 2 days later. Early Friday local time, the U.S. military conducted an airstrike at the Baghdad airport that killed Iranian Major General Qasem Soleimani, the commander of the Revolutionary Guard Corps' elite Quds force. Soleimani had orchestrated attacks on coalition bases in Iraq and was actively planning operations against Americans in the area, according to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. The attack marked the first time the U.S. designated the arm of another government as a terrorist organization. Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khomeini responded Friday, saying forceful revenge awaits the United States. Sorry about that. Okay, so... oy vey. So, do I excuse Iran killing a civilian contractor? No. But does that mean that I want them to escalate to an all-out war with Iran? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I'm not even sure what to say in regard to the Mike Pompeo allegation that... sorry about that. That Soleimani was orchestrating attacks on coalition bases in Iraq and actively planning operations against Americans in the area, especially that second part. I don't see where's the proof. You know, we can't just go on hearsay. You know, where's the proof, Mike? Where is the proof? You know, this is exactly the same shit that this is the same type of shit that went on in the lead up to Iraq. The U.S. government was like, oh, we have to attack because Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. No, he gave them up because he didn't want to be toppled by us, and we toppled them anyway. So that was bullshit. Saddam was looking for uranium from Niger. Wrong. And Colin Powell did the famous thing where he pretended like a urinal cake or something like that was uranium, and he took it to Iran. Like, Iran, see, Iran's building nuclear weapons of mass destruction. See, Saddam's got nuclear weapons. That was the pretext to us going into Iraq. So that worked out great, didn't it? And now, about 17 years later, almost 17, we're seeing the same thing happen with Iran. The exact same thing. Or the same type of thing, you know, so. And orchestrated by some of the same people. You know, there was a New York Times article, op-ed, that was published justifying war in Iran, and it was by a guy that was one of the main cheerleaders for the war in Iraq. So here we go again. Unbelievable. So I hope you're happy, John Bolton. I hope you're happy, Lindsey Graham. They've got to be just, those guys have got to be elated right now. Absolutely elated. And as for me, again, like I said, I lost sleep over this shit, you know, because I actually care about people. It's not Mike Pompeo's kids that are going off to war. It's not Lindsey Graham's kids that are going off to war that is not ours to fight. I mean, okay, like I said, I'll hold off on that point for a minute. But for God's sake, man. Again, am I happy that Iran probably did kill a U.S. civilian? Am I happy that they did that? Of course not. Am I defending the Iranian government? Of course not. I've gone after them before. In fact, in my last podcast, I said that, you know, I, or at least I heavily implied that Iranian workers should rise up against the government and overthrow it. Like, so I'm not, this is not a defense of the Iranian government. This is a defense of the Iranian people, the people who inevitably, because this is what wars do, are going to get killed as a result of this. Massive amounts of civilian casualties on both sides. I don't want our civilians being killed either, or our soldiers. So, and what the hell are all our military bases on the Iranian border? Our military bases, what are we doing there anyway? Get the fuck out of Iran. What are we doing there in the first place? That is my problem. What are we doing there in the first place? Get the fuck out. And I'm sorry. I normally have been trying to work on not cursing as much because I do want my ideas to be accessible to everyone. And I do want, you know, say, even 10-year-olds, I guess, if they could comprehend some of this stuff, which I'm sure some of them can. I want them to be able to hear this as well. So I'm not, so, you know, I've mainly tried to tone down the swearing, but honestly, I don't care in this specific instance because I am so pissed off because this is about people's lives. This is serious shit. Serious shit. You know, so, and what's more dangerous, by the way, what's more harmful to people? Me swearing or the government sending poor people to die to advance the interests of U.S. politicians and corporations? What's more dangerous? What's more lethal in that scenario? Pick between those two things. My swearing or the government's foreign policy? Like, oh my God. So that's my question, is what the hell were we doing there in the first place? We should get out. And by the way, there are plenty of reasons why Iran, has justification to be mad at us. Now, again, I'm not excusing the fact that they probably did kill this U.S. contractor. Again, not acceptable, but we don't have to go to frickin' war over it, you know? So anyway, some of the history of U.S.-Iranian relations, let me go through that with you, okay? In 1953, we overthrew the democratically elected government of Iran, headed by Mohammad Mossadegh, because Mohammad Mossadegh was going to nationalize Iran's oil sector and redistribute the profits back to the Iranian people. And we, the U.S. and Britain, didn't like that. So we said to Mohammad Mossadegh, nice leadership position you got there. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. Give us your oil, please. And then Mossadegh was like, yeah, no. And then we were like, okay, so we toppled them. So that's the first reason they have to be mad at us. The second reason is when we shot down an Iranian airliner in 1988. And so that was not good, obviously. And then, of course, we sided with Iraq during the Iran-Iraq War, which happened from in that same period of time, from 1980 to 1989, something like that. So, unbelievable. So that's why. And then, of course, there's these sanctions that have been hurting Iran. They can't get medicine to their own people. They've been struggling to get food and supplies and medicine, similar to what we're doing in Yemen, by the way. So, of course, the Iranians are going to be pissed at us. Again, get out. Get out of Iran. You know, that's what I would say. That's my sort of foreign policy prescription, if you will. Get out of Iran and do it now. You know, unreal, man. Because again, this is what happens. That Hold on. I gotta calm down for a minute. Okay. I want to make something very, very clear. I am not disparaging all U.S. soldiers. That's not what I'm doing. Because again, as I've said on this podcast before, many of them, they're just doing their job. Maybe they didn't have any other means of economic, of any economic sustenance whatsoever. Maybe they have relatives in the military that maybe have expected something, you know, expected military service of them. You know, it's like a tradition kind of thing. So I'm not, you know, now again, that's not necessarily, the second one isn't necessarily an excuse. You should still research our military interventions abroad. But, you know, to learn the real history as to why we do those things. But I'm not disparaging the vast majority of U.S. soldiers. The ones I will disparage are like the private armies like Blackwater and people like Chris Kyle. And there was a guy recently, I think is Gallagher, I think is his name, that was pardoned by President Trump. He was in the Navy. And there was actually video of people that were in his unit or whatever, or under his command in the Navy, that said, yeah, this guy is like really crazy. This guy is really crazy. So the vast majority of U.S. soldiers, they're exempt from my rant here, okay? Because whenever you criticize war, you inevitably get people that say, oh, you must just hate the troops. No, I don't hate the troops. In fact, I love our troops. I love our troops so much that I don't want the U.S. government to send them into unnecessary wars to die. That's how much I love the troops, okay? Because, again, the troops are human beings. I love all human beings. So that's an absolutely inaccurate statement to make. Like, ooh, Jordan hates the troops. No, I don't. No, I don't. So I just want them to be used correctly for defensive purposes as they're supposed to be used, not for stupid shit like this. This is so horrible. And of course, just a little while ago, I found out we're sending 3,500 troops to Iran. That's great. Oh, 3,500 troops. That is, what a brilliant move from the law and order Trump administration. You know, like, oh, I'm Mr. Law and Order. I'm the law and order candidate. I'm the law and order president. It's like, okay, no, you're not, because you didn't get congressional approval to do this. And you can only, in the United States, only Congress gets to declare war. The president can't willy-nilly send troops wherever he damn well pleases. You know, and to be fair, if Barack Obama were still the president or Bush were still the president, I'd be going after them right now, but they're not the president anymore, are they? No. But I've been consistent on this. I was against these willy-nilly interventions under Obama. I was against them under Bush. And I will continue to be against them during the remainder of the Trump administration and for every administration after that. Because again, only Congress gets to declare war. Only Congress gets to declare war. Let me say that one more time just to make sure it gets drilled into my audience's heads. I mean, most of them already know it, but anyway, sorry about that. Only Congress gets to declare war. You know, and Tulsi Gabbard went on Fox and Friends. I think I mentioned that earlier. And she basically was arguing that point, like, hey, President Trump didn't get congressional approval from this. And it's interesting how I've seen some arguments, like the comments section in the video is hilarious, because the same people that would probably cry about, you know, for instance, oh, the Democrats are going to take away your Second Amendment rights. I mean, yeah, the Democrats are pretty awful when it comes to the Second Amendment issues, admittedly, but it's funny, you don't have that objection, like, you don't cry, oh, the Constitution, when it comes to declaring war. Some of these people, you're like, oh, President Trump's so strong, he doesn't need Congress to declare war. Oh, the do-nothing Democrats were going to obstruct him, so I guess it's okay that he... No, Congress is supposed to declare war, period. End of story, end of discussion. Congress declares war. Jesus Christ. Sorry about that. I had to adjust my mic. God damn it. This makes me really, really angry. As you can see. I mean, good God. Unbelievable. Absolute horse shit. This is just... ugh. Kills me. Anyway. This, again, is a nice tie-in to what we were, to what I was going to discuss today, which is contradictions with the conservative ideology. So, in conservatism, and I'm specifically referring to conventional American conservatism, especially in the age of Trump, because it is riddled with contradictions. Absolutely freaking riddled with contradictions. So I wrote down a list, like I said, a few days ago. So let's go through them one by one, and then I'll give examples. So the first one is advocacy of small government mixed with authoritarian social policies. Now, this does not go for all conservatives. I do want to stress that. But I'm talking about your run-of-the-mill conservatives and the sort of evangelical base that Trump has managed to garner over the past few years. Those are the hypocrites that I'm talking about, and the sort of the ones with the contradictory ideology. So anyway, you'll have people that talk about, especially the politicians, you'll have people that constantly go off on the Democrats about being like the party of big government, and, you know, the party that wants to always raise your taxes and blah, 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 blah. We're the Republicans. We want you to, quote unquote, keep more of your own money. And we want you to have guns and, you know, all that stuff. But on the other hand, we want to police what drugs people can put in their body. We want to police what women can do with their own bodies. Now, again, I have stated quite clearly that I do consider myself, generally speaking, pro-life in my personal life. But politically, as long as I'm not being forced to fund organizations that perform abortions through my tax dollars, I'm good, man. I'm good. of course, you know, abortions, if they're, you know, not absolutely necessary, then I do have a moral objection to them. But again, as long as I don't have to pay for them, it's not my business. So, and that's something that a conservative could say. That's an argument that they could make is, hey, man, I disagree with the concept of abortion, but as long as I don't have to pay for it, you know, do what you want. That's like that would be a principled conservative position. But there are many conservatives that say, just because I don't agree with abortion, I'm going to ban it for everybody else. You know, so that's an example of advocacy of small government mixed with an authoritarian social policy. Same thing with marijuana legalization, although a growing number of conservatives, especially younger ones, more and more of them are in favor of marijuana legalization. More and more of them are in favor of gay marriage. So that, again, those are examples of, oh, we want small government, don't tread on me, and blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, don't let a man and a man get married. Don't let a woman and a woman get married. Just don't do that, you know, but at the same time claim that you're supposedly the small government person. No. No. So that's number one. And again, I must stress, I'm not referring to all conservatives. I'm saying that this is a tendency that I see, especially with the evangelical base, okay? But number two applies to a lot of conservatives, which is reverence for the state while claiming to oppose it, in terms of, you know, like, oh, these stupid liberal policies and these taxes and these regulations, and, you know, we hate the government, we you know, don't tread on me, you know, again. But at the same time, they'd be like, oh, we can't question the intelligence agencies, we can never question our military, and you know, we got to stand for the flag, we got to, you know, sing the national anthem as if it means anything, you know. And so that's a contradiction right there. So you claim to hate the state, but at the same time, you have no problem with, like, this over, this, like, worship of anybody that has authority and actually affects you the most. So again, police and military, you know, so they're by definition good. Like that's the thing. Like we don't like authority figures. We want to be left alone, just leave everybody alone. But at the same time, you gotta kiss the ass of the asses of authority figures at all times. You can't question anything they do. And if you do, you're a bad person. It's like, oh my God. So that ties into what I was saying about, like, for instance, Mike Pompeo is a deeply, deeply fundamentalist guy. He's a fundamentalist Christian. And at the same time, he advocates for every war ever. You know, it's like, dude, do you know that, have you ever read the Bible? Have you ever read anything that is in that book? Like, okay, in the Old Testament, okay, he has some justification, but yeah, like for his beliefs. But in the New Testament, 95 to 98% of the time, Jesus is perfectly, you know, hippy-dippy, everybody just get along and love each other, love your enemies, you know, so, like, that kind of thing. So, Mike Pompeo, why aren't you condemning all these wars that we're in? You know, it's almost like you don't care about that. It's almost like you're using that as, you know, just a cover, like, ooh, I'm a good Christian. You know, I advocate for all these wars where innocent people die and a few rich people make a hell of a lot of money. But I'm a good Christian, so, you know, and I pray, and I'm a good American, so I'm safe. You know, so I've been vindicated of all wrong. I've been freed of all wrongdoing because I'm such a good moral Christian and American. It's like, fuck you, Mike. Honestly, it's like, come on. Anyway, so that's an example. And again, look, if you want to revere the state, that's your business. If you want to sing the national anthem, you do it to your heart's content, okay? I'm not saying that, oh, you shouldn't do that. I mean, I don't know why you would, especially if you claim to not like the state and, you know, not, and you claim to not like big government. Okay, so for not liking big government, you want to, you know, you sure like to revere that government a lot, or at least revere the symbolism associated with that government. So, anyway, again, it doesn't make any sense to me, but if you want to do it, fine. But don't disparage other people for not doing it, for disagreeing with you, and just let them do what they want to do. Like, a perfect example of this is the Colin Kaepernick thing. So, what Colin Kaepernick did at first was he sat down when the national anthem was played, and then he consulted with, I think it was a Navy SEAL or something like that, or like an ex-military guy. And he's like, hey, man, I'm coming across as a dick here. So, like, how can I make this more palatable? And he said, oh, well, just kneel, man. If you feel like it, you know, if you don't want to stand for the national anthem, just kneel. So he kneeled, and then still conservatives were triggered by that, you know. So again, if you want to stand for the flag and sing the national anthem and sing all these patriotic songs and blah, 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 do that. You're free to do that. But again, don't belittle other people and don't take away their rights and don't take away their rights in response to that. So you don't have a right to take away their right to do a protest. It's just, it's unbelievable. And Tommy Lahren was a huge anti-Kaepernick person. Very, very big hypocrite with this. Because she's like, you know, oh, the lefties are, you know, big government lefties, and the, you know, the socialists are evil and blah, 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 blah. You know, freedom of speech needs to be protected and blah, 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 blah. Unless it's speech Tommy doesn't like, again, criticizing the military or not standing for the national anthem, then she's not in favor of it. Then shut up and sit down, or I guess in this case, shut up and stand up for the national anthem. So, Jesus. And another example of Tommy's hypocrisy on this is she was in a debate at Politicon, a panel, with Kyle Kulinski of Secular Talk, who, again, I reference on this show almost every podcast. And it's interesting because I don't really even agree with him a whole lot anymore. But I definitely still watch him because I like his news coverage. So I watch him for news stories, and I'll, you know, I agree with him on still a majority of issues, but much less than I used to. I used to be like 90% agreement with Kyle when I was more of a social democrat. But now that I'm an anarchist, we agree more like 50 to 60% of the time. So, but anyway, the point is, Tommy Lahren and Kyle Kulinski were on a panel at Politicon, I guess it would be last year, now that it's 2021,
2020, but the 2019 Politicon, Kyle Kulinski, Tommy Lahren, they were on a panel, and Kyle Kulinski was talking to Tommy about the Scandinavian model of economics and society, and how that's structured, how it's a more secular society, and the social democratic form of government and economy, where you have a mix of capitalism in the market sense, and then you have a social safety net, a big one, on top of that. So Tommy smugly said during that panel, "Well, hey, Kyle, you know, if you like it so much, why don't you just go to Denmark? You know, why are you going to bring that here to America? Why don't you just live in Denmark?" And Kyle was like, "Bitch, because I want to improve people's lives here in this country. You know, yes, I like Denmark, but I want their policies to be implemented here in America because it'll help virtually all Americans." So Tommy, again, it's if you agree with her, she's all for your right to say what you want and live here and be free and blah, 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 blah. But if she says something, or if you say something that she disagrees with, either shut up or leave the country, or, you know. So it's a very interesting contradiction and very interesting dichotomy with people like Tommy Lahren. So that's number two. And we're not, definitely not even close to done yet. So number three is freedom unless it violates conservative principles, which kind of I already touched on that with the Tommy Lahren thing. So you have the freedom to do what you want to do as long as it doesn't go against conservative principles. So that's Tommy Lahren in a nutshell. Basically, you have the freedom to do what I tell you to do. So number four, we can just skip that. So number four is, and this is specifically talking about politicians. So they're in favor of Wall Street bailouts. Most of them, anyway. There are some that are principled in this regard, like Rand Paul, who advocates both of these things that I'm about to say. So he's at least a little more consistent on this particular issue. But most conservatives are not, like, in the government. Most Republican politicians are not consistent when it comes to this. So they're for Wall Street bailouts, most of them. But they want to do everything they can to undermine and gut the social safety net. So if it's money for Wall Street, so rich people, that's great. Give it to them. But if it's money for poor people that need things like food stamps, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, all of these great programs that, you know, they have their problems, yes, but overall, they do a lot of good for a lot of people. So for those programs, oh, there's, you know, moochers, parasites, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, blah, 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 blah. But again, if it's Wall Street, oh, you guys have free reign to take as much tax money as you want, you know, go right ahead. But, oh, these poor people, these moochers, these parasites, the peasants, you know, they don't deserve safety net programs. They got to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and blah, 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 blah. So, and again, a lot of these people claim to be Christians. It's like, yeah, Jesus would totally support Wall Street bailouts and would actively try to impede the economic and social progress of poor people. So which welfare programs overall are designed to do. Now, again, there are some problems with them, and there are some incentive problems where sometimes it is more lucrative, I guess you could say, to stay on government programs rather than get a job. But all you have to do, instead of cutting welfare for everybody else, cutting safety net programs for everybody else, what you have to do is change the incentive structure, you know, incentivize people to go to work by making higher wages or, you know, increasing employer benefits so that these people who, by the way, are a very small segment of the population, the whole moocher thing, very small segment of the United States population. I can't speak for other countries because I'm not really sure about that particular statistic in other countries, but it is very small comparatively and like percentage-wise in the United States. Very small percentage of people. You got to change that incentive structure and give them a reason to want to go to well-paying jobs that are that can be fulfilling, you know. So anyway, it's not fair to punish the 90% of people that are just using welfare temporarily to get themselves through hard economic times. It's not fair to punish them with like 10% of the people, if that, who are, you know, misusing the welfare programs in the United States. So that's my piece on the whole welfare issue and the safety net issue. Now, of course, I support things like worker co-ops and things like that. So I'm not like a huge fan of the safety net, but I'd rather have it than not have it. That's my piece. So yeah, Jesus would totally support gutting the social safety net in favor of Wall Street bailouts. Sure. And that falls under, that leads into the next thing I was going to say, which is, you guys claim, again, to support the values of Jesus Christ, yet again, this is, again, specifically directed at the politicians. You guys claim that you, that you like to serve God, and you're very Christian people. Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Mike Pompeo, Donald Trump, you know, all these guys, George W. Bush. But again, you advocate for every war ever, Wall Street bailouts, and, you know, gutting the social safety net, like all these things, like, oh, and also especially in the case of like your hardcore Republican politicians and the hardcore like pro-Trump base, you guys also support heavily militarized borders. So, so much for small government, you know, like, so we want small government, but at the same time, we want to heavily militarize our borders and impede the right of other people from other countries to have free movement. Now, again, I'm not for completely open borders. I'm not. I prefer no borders rather than open borders because, as I've said before, open borders, in my mind, it has a connotation to me of being like, okay, we have borders, but we're not going to enforce them, which is somewhat similar to what the EU does, you know. And there are problems with that system, but, you know, mostly the EU functions okay under that particular system. But again, there are problems, so I'm not really a big fan of open borders per se. I would prefer to get rid of borders altogether rather than what I think open borders means, which is just we technically have borders, but we're just not going to enforce them. So I do support borders to an extent while we have a status system, as I've said before. So I'm not saying that we need to abolish the border immediately. No, there should be a transitional period where we gradually reduce border security and then abolish the border entirely. You know, of course, after the proletarian revolution. So that's what I support. I certainly don't support the policies of locking kids in cages and heavily militarizing the border, which both Democrats and Republicans have essentially agreed to. Don't let the Democrats' rhetoric fool you. They want to make it more humane, like Nancy Pelosi and people like that. They do want to make it slightly more humane, but largely unchanged. In fact, the House has passed several immigration bills that have been blocked by Republicans in the Senate to increase border security, increase funding for his stupid wall. So don't let him or don't let Donald Trump or the Republicans fool you. The Democrats are still very much in favor of a heavily militarized border and well-funded border. So oh yeah, here we go. So this kind of ties into what I was talking about earlier in regard to Tommy Lahren. So I have here the freedom to protest unless it's against something right wing. So again, this doesn't for the billionth time, this doesn't apply to every single conservative. I'm saying, you know, that I see this tendency with conservatives to do this. So anyway, the example that I gave for this in my notes here was there's a great, I think it's 8 parts. There's a great documentary by Ken Burns. Legendary filmmaker. He's made documentaries, docuseries about the Civil War, the Vietnam War, jazz music, baseball. You know, he's done a lot of great work. And his latest thing is this documentary on country music. And specifically what I'm going to talk about here is they covered the era of the 60s, where you had the youth, the young left-leaning youth against the older right-wing establishment that was very much in favor of the Vietnam War. And, you know, it was just, and sort of how country songs kind of reflected both sides of that divide there. You had Merle Haggard singing Okie from Muskogee, which is like basically a big fuck you to hippies, you know? And then you had other people like Johnny Cash that were that essentially opposed the war. So it was that kind of divide there, similar to what's happening today. And there was a woman that was interviewed in that country music documentary that was talking about during the Vietnam War, her son was drafted, and sorry about that. Her son was drafted and killed, okay? And somehow, I forget exactly how they found out about this, but these protesters knocked on this woman's door and invited her to join in the protest against the Vietnam War in response to learning that her son had died. So do I think that, especially so soon after her son died, do I think that it was right for these people to use this woman as to use her for protest purposes and to kind of exploit that story for the purposes of adding more justification for the protest. Not necessarily. I don't necessarily agree that they should have attempted to use her like that, because that's not very polite. That's not right. You don't do that, you know. However, the woman's response was equally troubling to me. The woman, her response was, "If you ever come around my door again," something like that, "if you ever come to this door again, I have a 357 Magnum and I'm going to blow your head off." What? That's not, I understand you're angry, but that's not, you can't threaten, I mean, these guys weren't threatening you. You don't threaten them, you know? So it's like, so you have somebody who presumably, and I'm not necessarily sure of this woman's political affiliations, but if you say some of the things that she was saying, it's pretty reasonable to assume that she was a conservative. I don't know too many lefties who make the argument of, men in Vietnam are over there fighting for your freedom to do this protest. So if you don't get off my property, I'm going to shoot you with my 357 Magnum. That's not something a lefty would say, or even a liberal would say. So first of all, obviously, no, the soldiers in Vietnam were not fighting for the right of Americans to preserve the right of Americans to have free speech. That's not what the soldiers in Vietnam were fighting for. No, they were fighting to advance the geopolitical interests of the United States government. That's what they were fighting for. So you can't use that as a dodge. Again, I get that this woman was upset, and I'm sorry for what happened to her son. And I agree that these anti-war protesters should not have exploited this woman's situation for political gain. I totally agree with that. However, you can't threaten people like that who you disagree with, and who in a broader sense, the broader topic of war, they're right and you, I'm sorry ma'am, are wrong. You're just wrong. That's not what U.S. soldiers fight for. If it was what they fought for, then you'd have a point, but again, they don't do that. And they didn't do that during Vietnam, especially. It was, again, to advance the geopolitical and strategic interests of the United States. It wasn't some, principled crusade like Soviet troops in Vietnam were going to, and Soviet sympathetic troops in Vietnam were going to be on our doorstep and invading Delaware if we didn't go in there and attack them first. It's like, what? You should only use military force in the event of an imminent threat of attack or an actual attack against the nation. Like, again, World War II. Hawaii was not a state at the time, but it was a U.S. territory when it was attacked on December 7th, 1941. So, yes, we were somewhat justified, in fact, largely so, for fighting back. However, Vietnam was totally senseless. So that's what I would say to that. So that is an example of that dynamic of, okay, so I'm going to say that soldiers fight for your freedom. So I will say that I have that belief, but at the same time, despite the fact that you have that belief, that, or sorry, that you have that right I'm going to threaten to blast your head off with a 357 Magnum if you exercise that right. So, and say something that I disagree with. So, now, do I think that this woman would have literally done that? Probably not. I don't know this woman. I don't know what her overall character is. So I can't make a fair assessment. But I'm assuming that she wouldn't actually do that. But you still don't say that to people, you know? So, unbelievable. So the border thing I already kind of went over, so I'm not going to do that again. And the revering the state thing falls into, and of course the delusion that U.S. soldiers fight for the freedom of their fellow Americans and the freedom of others, you know, abroad. Those are an example of what I'm going to talk about next, which is they have that the right wing. A lot of them like to fancy themselves anti-PC, like, oh, these stupid lefties on these crazy lefties on college campuses getting triggered over everything. Oh, they're so annoying with their, you know, virtue signaling and their fucking blue hair and their whining about microaggressions and trigger warnings and blah, 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 blah. So that's what a lot of them say. But then many of these people, the same people, many of them, again, if you say anything against the military, against the American flag, against the American state, or against, say, oh, I don't know, and this is specifically, this point specifically, again, is referring to evangelicals. If you oppose, for instance, bringing the Bible back into the school system, then they're the ones that get triggered. They're the ones that need safe spaces. They're the ones that turn into snowflakes. Like, oh my God, you said you didn't stand for the national anthem. Ooh, be offended. Be very offended, you know, that kind of thing. Or, ooh, you triggered me by telling the truth about American foreign policy, you know. So again, that's, again, an example of right-wing political correctness. Right-wing political correctness is the U.S. military and the U.S. government never do anything wrong, ever. You always stand for the national anthem. You always pledge allegiance to the flag. You always have reference for the state while, you know, opposing most of what the state does. So again, that's an example of right-wing PC. Let me see what the last one is here. So again, they turn into snowflakes, and as they, now again, I do want to say I'm opposed to the left being PC. I have been, from the very beginning of this podcast, I've made it very clear that I'm against the left censoring people that we disagree with. Absolutely. So there are some things that the left needs, that many on the left, I should say, need to work on as well, in terms of defending people that we disagree with. So we've got some progress to be made in that area as well. However, so does the right wing. So, anyway, I have another note here. You don't just, there are a lot of people that don't defend conservatives, a lot of conservatives that don't defend people they disagree with when it comes to their free speech. So, for instance, when it comes to pro-Palestinian activists, for instance, who overwhelmingly are left-leaning, I don't hear a peep usually from people like Ben Shapiro, Steven Crowder, Dennis Prager, you know, because again, these guys are all massively in favor of Israel. So their automatic thing is like anything that's even remotely pro-Palestinian is bad by definition and wrong by definition. So even though I claim to be a crusader for free speech, I'm gonna, you know, either go after them, which is the worst approach, I'm gonna either go after them and actively impede their ability to speak freely, or the less bad but still bad option of I'm just not gonna say anything about it at all and pretend it never happened. So that's an example, again, of conservatives, not all of them are in favor of, or not all of them have this principled stand on free speech when it comes to speech that they disagree with. And as Noam Chomsky famously said, if you don't defend the free speech of the people that you disagree with the most, then you don't believe in it at all. You do not believe in free speech if you don't believe in it for everyone. So anyway, last one I have here is usually Republican donors are good and Democratic donors are bad. So if you're, for instance, Sheldon Adelson, I don't see any criticism from people on the right for him trying to influence Republican politicians or the Koch brothers, except maybe Tucker Carlson, because Tucker Carlson spoke out a couple of times against the Koch brothers. But other than him, there aren't a lot of GOP members who are willing to criticize the epidemic of money in politics, essentially. So those guys are good. Sheldon Adelson is good. The Koch brothers are good. Foster Freeze is good. You know, those guys are fine. But God forbid people like George Soros and Jeff Bezos contribute to causes that they believe in, which lean more Democratic or are more of a Democratic issue, then all of a sudden, oh, it's bad. You know, George Soros is like a nefarious puppet master, as Glenn Beck used to call him. He's a puppet master, and Bill O'Reilly made that assertion as well, or similar assertions, rather. So those guys are bad because we disagree with them on certain social issues, even though they would probably agree with us on a lot of economic issues. Because there's some differences in social issues, George Soros and Jeff Bezos are inherently bad. But since they agree with us on a lot of things, the Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson, Foster Freeze, blah, 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 they're good. You know, they're fine. So again, which is it? You can't, that doesn't logically follow. You've got to pick one or the other. You know, either everybody should be allowed to donate to political causes they agree with, or the better option, nobody should be allowed. So am I a big fan of George Soros and Jeff Bezos because they're at least on paper socially liberal? No. I hate them both. Fuck them both, man. But also, fuck Sheldon Adelson. Fuck the Koch brothers. You know, and, you know, everybody else that donates to political causes, except with the one exception being certain unions. You know, even though, again, I prefer the worker cooperative model. But if you're talking about things like PACs run by these billionaires, get them out of here. You know, all these PACs and all these individual billionaire donors are ruining and actively impeding the democratic processes in the United States of America. So anyway, it's going to be obviously a little bit shorter of a podcast today. because I didn't go over multiple news stories and I didn't have a double video breakdown, but I wanted to at least give you guys something because I missed a week. So that is why I came up with this special, which was my commentary on what I perceive to be contradictions within the conservative ideology. And also, ooh, I just thought of one more. They have nothing to say about the power structure of corporations, the authoritarian power structure of corporations. But at the same time, if they were really in favor, again, of like of freedom and small government and blah, 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 they would advocate the worker cooperative model, because the worker co-op model it's an inherently more democratic system, because decisions are made from the bottom up as opposed to the top down, which is what the corporate model is based on, a top down dictatorial authoritarian approach. And again, the cooperative model, like Mondragon, in Spain, Mondragon is a worker cooperative, and they are a huge success as far as corporations go. And they have a person that they elect to be their CEO, if you will, and he is 100% beholden to his workers, and he is there to represent the interests of his workers. That's not how corporations obviously typically work. So that's another contradiction right there. If you really believed in freedom and small government, you would support the worker co-op model, not the corporate model. So anyway, sorry for that quick little tangent there. Now I'm pretty much done. So that was just as a quick recap, the contradictions as I perceive them to be within the conservative ideology, specifically the American conservative ideology, or at least the predominant American conservative ideology. So anyway, and then I also again talked about the escalation with Iran, which is dangerously close to an all-out war, which is great. War number 9, folks. So I don't know, I'm kind of tired, so I think I'm going to end it right here. But I just wanted to give you guys something as opposed to nothing, since I missed a week. So this is what you get, and I hope you enjoyed this as always. And so I'll see you next week here on the left side of liberty. Thank you for listening.